morning, may please the court. My name is Sam Storm, attorney registration number 11894. I'm here on behalf of the York Figlis, who is a husband and father at a dissolution of marriage proceeding that was instituted in Jefferson County. Mr. Figlis also appears this morning. Your Honors, very, very briefly, Mr. Figlis had followed his wife to Kiev, Ukraine. And in 2010, in the spring, they separated. He was excluded from the marital home with an expiring visa, no job prospects, physically excluded by bodyguards, and decided to come back to Colorado, where he had been born and raised, on school, college, extensive family ties, to reestablish his life here.
Let me ask a threshold question. Apparently, there's been a divorce in Ukraine, which your client recognizes as valid and has recorded it in this country. What is there left to do here?
Well, Your Honor, the problem with what I understand, although it's not part of the record, that divorce that occurred in Ukraine is repugnant to the laws of Colorado. It was added to the mother's brief as an appendix, as the court knows, in her response brief. I am not counsel for Mr. Figlis in Chicago. But I do understand that Mr. Figlis continues to be denied parenting time, that the decree that was entered in Ukraine does not provide him for reasonable parenting time with his children, that the decree does not provide for an analysis of a property division that I'm aware of. It does not provide for such things as maintenance that we in Colorado hold dear to our dissolution of marriage rubric.
And can we even take judicial notice of that?
No.
Petition, counsel?
Absolutely not. There's no basis for you to do that. First of all, it's written in Ukrainian. And I can tell you that as part of our presentation in preparation in front of Judge Berryhill, we had begun to look at various different translators and people who would be experts. No one was ever...
Was this evidence before Judge Berryhill?
No.
That there had been a petition filed, not in Ukraine, but actually that... Mr. Figlis had himself filed his petition in Illinois?
No, that didn't happen, Your Honors, until after Judge Berryhill's ruling.
Okay.
The Ukrainian matter, however, commenced prior to this one. And
it did.
Your client had been served in that matter before this one was filed.
Exactly. What may be lost in that, though, Your Honor, is that there was an initial Ukrainian petition that was brought and was dismissed because the court determined it didn't have jurisdiction. Now, everything we're talking about right now is not part of the record of appeal, but
I'm asking a practical question.
Sure, right? Sure.
Because, you know, we don't do things for theoretical reasons.
I understand. What should be noted, though, just to finish the point, is that there's really nothing wrong, given the current state of affairs, with Mr. Figlis seeking additional remedies in other courts to try and see his kids, or to try and have property rights determined as the statutes in the state of Colorado or Illinois would provide. And so, heck, if he's unsuccessful in Illinois, he can go back to the Ukraine. The bottom line is that he's really been denied some essential rights. I think what my understanding of the untranslated order, or somewhat translated order, is that it really runs afoul of what we do here under the Dissolution of Marriage Act. There's a couple of main points I want to make before I run out of time. One is that Judge Berryhill utilized the wrong standard of review and our burden. In a couple of different places in his ruling, he talks about that there has to be certainty, that Mr. Figlis's burden was to clearly and convincingly persuade him that he's a domiciliary of Colorado.
Doesn't he also, at a couple times, reference the preponderance of evidence standard as well?
He said it at the beginning of his ruling, that based upon a preponderance. But then when he's analyzing the facts, what he says on two different occasions is that he didn't certainly, with any certainty, or clearly, or convincingly, persuade me that he's a domiciliary. Alternatively, we know that if I'm here asking you to find that the ruling was clearly erroneous, it's a very tough burden. I acknowledge that. I really do, and I wouldn't be here.
Especially with the conflicting evidence.
Well, you know, if you look at the conflicting evidence, if you look at mom's evidence, mom had the ex-first lady of Ukraine testify by telephone that at a cocktail party where Mr. Figlis was having drinks and discussing life in general, he didn't say, I'm having marital problems, and I'm going to leave and go back to Colorado. I know if I was having cocktails with Laura Bush or Hillary Clinton, I wouldn't be talking about my marital problems if I had them. That's the first thing he says. The second thing that she said is that he never told me or the children that he was moving back to Colorado. Okay? That just pales in comparison to the mountain of evidence that we presented at the trial.
Well, let me ask you about Mr. Stroman. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, it's okay.
Because I don't want to use up all your time. The court relied, as I recall it, on pleadings in this case, where your client was saying things like, you know, I'm taking a trip to Colorado. I'm going to go. I got some business in Colorado. Words to that effect, which the court would suggest, you know, said, someone who's going home wouldn't say, I'm taking a trip to Colorado. And the court relied on that. Now, I think you have some questions about whether it was proper. So I want to ask about that. Why wouldn't those be judicial admissions? Why can't the court rely on your own client's pleadings?
Well, first of all, the court did not ever take judicial notice of those pleadings. They're unverified, and the first time we heard about it was in the course of Judge Berryhill's recitation.
No, but I'm not sure how you can say that. You filed them. I mean, how can you say the first time you heard about it? It's your client's own pleadings.
Well, but they're ambiguous. And so I think what CRE 201E says that if the court's going to utilize unverified pleadings to rely upon in its rulings, we have to be given an opportunity to be heard on that. The first time that it came up was when we received the ruling from the bench. And so Mr. Figlis wasn't able to explain or clarify what he meant was by taking a trip to Colorado. Clearly at the time, the evidence is from what we see is that he was meeting with Mr. Moat to begin this business. He had plans drawn up. He had all kinds of diagrams. He did a demographic study. He got a voter registration card. He joined the library. He got a library card. He owned property here.
Did he get this all 90 days before he filed his petition?
That's correct.
All of it.
Was he here to start a business or here to help manage a business?
He was here to start a business. There's no question, and the record is clear, Your Honor, that the family had various businesses in Colorado and various commercial properties, but the testimony was uncontroverted at the trial court that he came back and met with gentlemen and people to establish a new laundromat business, and those exhibits were admitted.
The family already had a laundromat
years before he was coming back.
Was no longer operating?
That's correct. It had not been operating for quite some time.
I thought the sister had had an injury and was unable to manage it. And it was existing.
No, there was no evidence at the trial that the sister was operating the laundromat business at the time that he moved back in July of 2010. To the contrary, the documents was that he was going to redevelop the property, was going to bring in all the equipment, and those drawings and plans and what have you were testified to at length by the contractors who he was working with in July of 2010 to reestablish that business. He was paying utilities in his own name on those real properties. I indicated he had a voter registration card. He had his Colorado driver's license. His Facebook page that mom relied on at trial says that his hometown is Denver, Colorado, throughout this proceeding. He joined a local church. He had doctors that he established relationships with. He established a relationship with a recreation center. I know I'm not giving facts to you, but I think if you look at the totality of all of these facts, I think the trial court made a mistake. I don't think...
But it's going to be more than that, right? It needs to be clearly erroneous. You make a very compelling case, Mr. Stroman. The facts that you recite are compelling, and they're strong. And it may well be, if I were the trial judge, I would come out your way. But my concern is, there is evidence on the other side. I guess maybe that's the question. Do you disagree that there's evidence?
I do.
Because Ms. Jaresko says, you know, things like in a 182-day period, and Dad says he moved to Colorado, he was only here 75 days. And there were planned vacations. He's taking vacations to Colorado with his daughters. And it does seem like there was some evidence of that. So my question really is going to, you know, wasn't there evidence on both sides? And what's our level of deference here to the trial judge?
No. There isn't evidence on both sides. And I will point out to you, perhaps most significantly, and I want to be heard on this clearly today, is that the trial court found clearly that Mr. Figgis was a resident of Wheat Ridge, Colorado, beginning in July of 2010. He found that in February of 2012, and he found he was continuously resident since July of 2010.
Can you have residences, number of residences, but one domicile?
Yes, you can, Your Honor, and I think what the case law has said, and I think McMillan and the Atkins case talk about, that you need to then have intent. There is nothing in Judge Berryhill's findings about Mr. Figgis's intent. Nothing. What we have instead is a whole conglomeration of facts that would lead a reasonable person to clearly and convincingly understand that he lives here. And he continued to live here until February of 2012, till the time of the ruling, nearly 19 months. And that wasn't considered by the trial court
either. And then what?
He's still here. He's sitting in his courtroom. He's remained here.
Are you saying he was consistently here from July 2010 to 2012?
No, sir. He took some trips to go and attempt to see his children in Kiev, and he was denied that parenting time in most instances. That was evidence that the trial court heard. And I think leaving temporarily in the McMillan case in Atkins is not to be considered as a change of domicile. But what I'm trying to convince you of is that if the trial court found that in July of 2010 through February of 2012, he was continuously residing in Colorado, and he did all of these things that anybody who you would expect intended to have a permanent home in Colorado did, I think the evidence is overwhelmingly in favor of the conclusion that there was a erroneous ruling. And I'd like to reserve, if I could, a few minutes, because I don't know exactly what she's going to say. I have a suspicion.
Good morning, Your Honor. Excuse me. I'm Martha Fitzgerald, 14078, and with me at council table today is Justin Cohen, whose number I don't have memorized, but is 44811. Just as a preliminary matter, I'd like to say that we have not litigated, nor have we briefed, nor has there been any discussion in the underlying matter about the issues of international comity and the implications thereunder which might arise if we were to decide whether the Ukraine decree, child support determination, child custody determination, and property disposition which have been effected there would be properly registered here in the United States. So those issues were never brought up. The only issue that was before the trial court was whether Mr. Figgis had been domiciled,
and
not a resident.
That's right. There are two questions that I heard presented. One is, you know, gee, he got the wrong standard of proof. He was operating under clear and convincing evidence standard of proof. And the second thing is, as I understand, there's no evidence to support Judge Berryhill's ruling that he was not present here with the intent to remain here for 90 days before the filing of the petition.
Yes, Your Honor. You heard Mr. Storman state that Judge Berryhill commented that Mr. Figgis had resided in Colorado since July. But what we have to do here is look at a snapshot of December 29th, 2010, and see if that residing, if it even is true, if you look at the actual numbers, even if he did reside here for 90 days, next preceding, December 29, 2010, did he have the intent plus the residence which equals domicile? And even though there is case law cited by Mr. Figgis to the effect that residence is equivalent to domicile, and that is not the current law. For example, the Aikens case, which is cited immediately after the case, I think it's Mulholland that Mr. Figgis cites to say that residence is sufficient, clearly indicates that domicile is not synonymous with residence, but must have an intent component. The Supreme Court itself states. In the Mississippi Van Choctaw case with Poolside, that domicile is not necessarily synonymous with residence. One can reside in one place but be domiciled in another. For adults, domicile is presence in a place in connection with a certain state of mind concerning one's intent to remain there.
Counsel, let's go back to my first question.
Yes, sir.
And which I don't know whether we ever got a response to. One, did he use the wrong standard burden of proof, the judge, in making his findings? Two, is there any evidence to support the conclusion that Mr. Figless did not have the intent to transform his residence into his domicile?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, Kim.
At the outset of his ruling, Judge Berryhill twice stated that he was using the preponderance of evidence standard. And at the end of his ruling, at page 40, I believe it is, he also stated, again, he was using the preponderance of evidence standard. Now, at one point, he did say it's essential to just establish with some degree of certainty whether there has been intent. And he did use the word convincing at one time, but he was using the word convincing in a different way. He was not enunciating a clear and convincing standard. He clearly was applying the preponderance of evidence standard. He stated it at least three times.
And these are bench comments, are they?
Yes, Your Honor, in rendering his opinion.
A lot of rambling bench comments, as I recall.
Yes, Your Honor. But that was the framework, the beginning and the end of his opinion that he rendered from the bench, that he was using the preponderance of evidence standard to decide, and the key question, which you have identified, Your Honor, whether or not Mr. Biglis had intent as of that date, September 29, 2010, going back 90 days to stay. And as you have read in the record, there is extensive testimony by Mr. Resso that Mr. Biglis was traveling back and forth to assist his sister in a laundromat business to help her get it back on its feet, maybe start working on his own. But this was a pattern that the parties had undertaken in the 15 out of 22 years of their marriage. There was a back and forth traveling between the two locations by Mr. Biglis, sometimes with the children, often during the summer, which he did in July of 2010. And often at Christmas time, which he did in December of 2010 as well. There was nothing that was any different in that pattern. Now, in retrospect...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Well, what about all the other things Mr. Storman talked about? Health club membership, driver's license, voting registration. I don't think Mr. Figless did that every time he visited.
The testimony had indicated, Your Honor, that the parties had always had either an Illinois or a Colorado driver's license for the convenience of being able to drive when they came back to the States. They are U.S. citizens. Mr. Resso's family is located in Illinois. Mr. Figless' family is located in Colorado. They've always voted in the United States. I don't know about the health club membership, but the Facebook incident that Mr. Storman just referred to, where it says hometown Colorado, also says current city Kiev, Ukraine. So there was good evidence on both sides. But this judge, sitting in his position as the trial court judge, was in the best place to evaluate the evidence under the totality of the circumstances and to weigh the credibility of the witnesses, to weigh the credibility of Mr. Figless himself as to whether or not that intent went back in time to August, or whether that was something that sort of began to formulate after he had been served in Ukraine on December 17th, 2010. Now, Judge Berryhill, in looking at the totality of the circumstances and attempting to ascertain whether requisite intent was present, did rely heavily on the Viernes case. And the Viernes case rejects a mechanistic approach of just listing driver's license, voting, and so forth and so on, in favor of a more, I guess you'd say, a gestalt to derive intent. I believe Judge Berryhill did consider all the facts and circumstances and testimony improperly arriving at his conclusion under Viernes. You'll recall in Viernes, there was a 90-day residence, and the court said, no, 90 days enough. A bald fact, Chief Judge Harrison, Justice Harrison, stated a bald fact of a 90-day residence is not enough. to establish and equate to domicile.
Would you also agree that there's sufficient evidence in the record to support the contrary conclusion?
Yes, Your Honor. There, the Lowry case holds, however, that even when conflicting evidence is presented, a reviewing court may not substitute its conclusions for those of the trial court merely because there may be credible evidence supporting a different result. And Judge Berryhill acknowledged that. He acknowledged it was a difficult case. But again, he, among other things, had the opportunity to observe the testimony and the evidence as a whole that day. I believe he rendered a very careful, detailed presentation. He did recite the facts and the evidence on either side. He discussed the evidence in regard to the demeanor and credibility of the witnesses. And his ruling was 44 pages long, as you said, from the bench. In regard to the Illinois pleading, again, we are not here to litigate, and that will be in another forum, whether or not the Ukraine decree and its attendant.
Does that have any bearing on our case, though, so if we can't take judicial notice of
it? Your Honor, we have cited in our brief cases that indicate that courts may take judicial notice, even appeal courts may take judicial notice of filings in a related case.
In another state?
In another state. And those cases are cited in our brief, if Your Honor would like me to indicate.
No, that's fine.
Those are...
Don't waste your time on that.
Okay. And regarding the issue of considering, Judge Berryhill's considering the pleadings that were actually filed in the case in Jefferson County, the Vento case clearly holds that judicial notice has expanded. There's really, judicial notice is irrelevant. A court can always look at the pleadings that are filed in the matter before it, whether they're verified or not verified.
Excuse
the
me.
Case cited by Mr. Beglis simply says that the court, it's an old case, I believe it's a 1900 case, says basically that courts can take judicial notice of verified pleadings filed in the case. Doesn't say anything but not unverified pleadings. And certainly, if we can't rely on the the pleadings as presented by our attorneys as being representative as agents of the client, it will be a difficult situation going forward in litigation.
Was there any discussion of these pleadings at the hearing?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. It may have been before the hearing.
But these were pleadings filed in this very case.
These were pleadings filed in this very case.
Can I ask you just briefly, Ms. Fitzgerald, about this personal jurisdiction issue? The court seemed to have reached out. I'm not sure we would need to get there. But if we did, why haven't you all waived that argument? I mean, the law is pretty clear. If you have a concern about personal jurisdiction, you have to raise it in your answer. And I don't think you ever did. So you told us that we don't have to reach it. The problem is the court did. And so we may have to reach it. If we have to get there, why haven't you waived that argument?
That argument may have been waived, Your Honor. I was not present, frankly, at the beginning of that, and I'm not sure why that was not raised. We are prepared to argue the minimum contacts issue, the due process issue raised by Judge Berryhill under appropriate long arm analysis, international shootings, progeny, and so forth, if the court so desires. The court, I think it's important to note that, yes, we agreed that was not raised at trial. It was not discussed in opening. It was not discussed in closing. The judge did this sua sponte, and the judge withdrew his ruling. Therefore, we've exceeded that's not an issue here, and we're not really clear on why that's still being brought to the court's attention.
Did you say the judge withdrew that part of his ruling?
The judge withdrew that part of his ruling based on protest by Mr. Beglis. May I continue?
Please, absolutely.
Just in closing, Your Honors, we realize this is a difficult situation that the courts of Colorado have faced going back almost since Colorado was formed as a state. Some of the older cases that we cite Cairns from 1902, Sedgwick from 1911. You see the courts struggling at the turn of the century to try to figure out how to handle the appropriate foreign issues and jurisdiction issues when you have immigrants coming not only from other states, but from other countries, citizens coming in to work in mines, on railroads, and so forth, very transitory. And so the courts and the legislature formulated this concept that one must be a domiciliary of Colorado for a year before initiating a divorce proceeding. But also inherent in that is that there must be no other residence. And that was key at the turn of the century. I guess that was the turn of the last century, because now the kids say the turn of the century was 2000. But going forward into our century, we're struggling with it in a different way, because now we have an international economy. We have U.S. families who've established domicile abroad for many years, such as in this case, where these parties have lived in Ukraine continuously since 1994, and before that, all but 4 years of their 22 marriage for a total of 15 years. The legislatures reflected that change by changing the word residence to domicile in 1977, and made clear throughout a subsequent case law of the judiciary branch that domicile is residence and intent. So again, it all boils down here to what was Mr. Iglesias' intent at that time, not today, not January 5th, not tomorrow, but on December 29th, 2011. And again, I submit that Judge Berryhill, after hearing all of the evidence, after evaluating the credibility of the witnesses, and after looking at the case law, specifically the flexibility afforded by the earnest, made a proper ruling, and it should not be overturned. Thank you.
I have one more question for you, Ms. Fitzgerald. Sure. On the attorney's fees issue, I want to make sure you're asking for fees on appeal because the appeal is frivolous?
We're asking for our fees on appeal, and I realize this is a sensitive issue, because when Mr. Feiglis went to Cook County, Illinois, and filed in December of 2012, his request to register the Ukraine decree, he was in effect acknowledging the validity of that decree. We asked him then to withdraw this appeal, because you can't be bringing actions that are essentially replications in different jurisdictions. It's a waste of judicial resources. It runs a risk of inconsistent rulings. And so we requested that he withdraw this appeal, because if he believes that the Ukraine decree is valid, which he must because he has otherwise misrepresented to Cook County Court, is valid, then he cannot be saying, and by the way, I want to start a Colorado action.
Well, here's my, and your time is up, so I want to just kind of get to the root of this. Here's my problem. You yourself told us before the evidence would have supported a ruling his way. This is a pet peeve of mine, so you'll have to forgive me. We see, particularly in divorce cases, these claims for attorney's fees and arguments about frivolous, sometimes because the parties are emotional. I don't disparage either party here. I don't see how that, and I want you to tell me, how could this possibly be frivolous when you yourself have told me the court could have ruled the other?
No, Your Honor, I apologize. I should have razor-bladed that out a little more succinctly in my brief. We're not asking for attorney fees for the underlying action. We're not asking for attorney fees for preparation of the appeal up to the point where he filed in Cook County. After that, in my mind, this appeal should have been withdrawn. Our preparation for this appeal, our continued...
Are you saying it's a bad faith? Are you saying it's vexatious?
I do not know the motive for which that was done, but once it was done, it was a clearly inconsistent action, clearly diametrically opposed to what's happening here, and therefore, this appeal should have been withdrawn, because there was a clear acknowledgement that Ukraine decree and all the attendant proceedings had been complete. Now, I'm not going to cast aspersions on anyone's motive. It may have been a mistake. It may have been a misapprehension. But all I'm saying is, from the point that was filed on December I believe it was 12, 18, 2012, maybe December 12th, our attorney time going forward shouldn't have been spent because this appeal should have been withdrawn.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. Hold on one second, Mr. Stoneman. Is there 3 minutes left? You're okay. Would you add 2 more minutes in case Mr. Stoneman wants to use it or in case we want Mr. Stoneman to use it?
Thank you, Your Honor.
And now you have a lot of good questions here.
We tell jurors in Colorado in a contract situation that perhaps the strongest evidence and the most credible evidence of what really happened between two parties in a contract is what did they do before the lawyers got involved? What did they do before they showed up in court? And the evidence here and the strong inference here, the insurmountable inference here, is that Mr. Figlis intended to live in Colorado. He had done so from July of 2010 until February of 2012. There's nothing in this order that talks about his intent. There's nothing in this order in terms of findings that found that he did not intend to permanently reside in Colorado, only that he lived here for 19 months.
Mr. Stoneman, what do you do with the evidence that Ms. Fitzgerald cited to us? Again, I heard your argument about the pleadings, but this well, he came back all the time. What do we do with that?
Well, the evidence in the record is that from time to time he would come back and bring his children here to visit. That's the evidence in the record, that they would vacation here from time to time.
And that's what they did in July of 2010.
Well, no, they did that in July of 2010, Your Honor, but what he also did was he met extensively with a number of different contractors and people in the business community, establishing and reestablishing this laundromat business, making new drawings, having demographic studies prepared, establishing all of these types of relationships. I don't want to reiterate all of them. You've obviously heard them.
Wasn't that part of the pattern of evidence, though, about him coming back to assist his sister or his family?
No, there was no evidence at the trial court level that prior to July of 2010 he'd ever come back and done anything of the sort that he had done in 2010, and that I don't recall anything in the record that would indicate that he had ever entered into business relationships or registered to vote and those sorts of things, established those relationships. Nearness, because counsel mentioned, I want to touch briefly, is just factually inapposite. It's a military case where two people are domiciled, one in Hawaii, one on the East Coast. He's stationed down, I don't remember if it was the Air Force Academy or Patterson or someplace, and files and the court says, no, that's not going to cut it. You're domiciliary somewhere else. That is not this case. I want to just also briefly touch on the judicial notice that Judge Gabriel asked about. It may very well be that the trial court was appropriate in taking judicial notice of what Mr. Figlis' prior counsel wrote in a paper that was filed.
Isn't judicial notice when it's in the very same case?
Well,
it's the very same case?
I agree. Absolutely.
The difference, what? It is or is it?
It is. It is. I agree. But the distinction is you got to do it. You got to tell everybody you're doing it. Either counsel has to ask for it or the court has to do it sua sponte. But you can't just do it in your head and not tell us.
Let me ask you, there are no consequences to what lawyers say on behalf of their clients in a case. And you think the lawyers are ill-informed about, you know, whatever they say can have no consequences?
I agree with you completely, Your Honor. I completely. But the distinction is that if the judge had intended to utilize those statements that his lawyer made without him verifying, it was incumbent upon the court to allow him an opportunity to be heard under 208.
Why isn't it just fair game to use the statements that an attorney has filed on behalf of his client in the case?
Well, relating to that, why isn't it a judicial admission as opposed to judicial notice?
Because it doesn't rise to the level of that. The words taking a trip are capable of a number of different interpretations. You can look at what his prior counsel wrote in those papers and you can say, boy, what do you mean by that? He should have been allotted an opportunity to explain what was meant and what he was doing.
But that's different. That's a due process concern you're raising, but that's different than saying it is a judicial admission. The man pled, I took a trip to Colorado.
Well, except the 201E, with all due respect, 201E says to us, we have to, as litigators and as litigants, have an opportunity to be heard if someone tells us that judicial notice regarding a particular fact is going to be indicated, and that didn't happen here. And the first time you hear about it is when the judge is making his ruling. And even if it's appropriate, as Judge Daly has indicated, it's ambiguous. If you go back and read those papers, I don't know what they mean. It doesn't say I'm a domiciliary, I'm not coming back, I'm going. The personal jurisdiction issue, just very, very quickly, she was served in Colorado, so I don't think long-arm jurisdiction is implicated at all. And it is correct that we did file a Rule 60 motion. It was granted, but it was granted following the notice of appeal, so it was avoided.
Counsel, can you spend 1 minute, and 1 minute only, on the issue about why it was not vexatious or frivolous to continue with this appeal in light of the filing in Illinois?
Because of the overwhelming evidence, Your Honor, that he is a domiciliary. He's been living here now for years. He did all of these things prior to 90 days before filing. He wants to see his kids. He wants to have a complete ruling and go back to the Jefferson County Court and have a Colorado divorce. I have no personal knowledge of what's occurred in Chicago. It's not part of the record. I'm not licensed in Illinois. I was not part of whatever he did. And the fact that he took the snippet that he received from the Ukrainian courts and took it to get it enforced, I don't know if it has been enforced.
Let me ask you, though, is there a prospect of coming up with inconsistent rulings if we were to rule your way that there was sufficient evidence of domicile, and therefore this case is alive, and meanwhile they're trying to enforce a Ukrainian dissolution order?
I don't think so. And mostly it's because I don't think the Ukrainian order addressed most of what we do in Colorado to divorce people. That's my understanding.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your oral arguments in this case. The case will stand submitted, and opinion will issue in due course.